President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe is in his 80s. His country is close to economic collapse and his ruling party is divided over the succession. And yet Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, seems preoccupied with internal battles. My guest today, here in Johannesburg, is a senior member of the MDC. But does Zimbabwe's opposition have what it takes to mobilize the masses?
David Coulthard, welcome to Hard Talk.
Thank you.
Where do you think the Zimbabwe opposition should focus its efforts against Robert Mugabe now? Should it be on the streets and street protest, or should it be the parliamentary process?
I think we need to realize that this isn't going to be a sprint as we had hoped. It's more of a marathon. And we've got to employ a wide range of tactics against this regime. It's not just in the streets. It has to be in the streets to get the world's attention. But it also needs to be in the courts, it needs to be in parliament, and it needs to be in the international community.
You say it's not a sprint, but everybody knows that we are entering the end game for Robert Mugabe. He's in his early 80s. He faces a decision about what to do in 2008 when his current term runs out. So these matters are now pressing. You cannot wait and decide strategy in the future.
No, we're not waiting to decide strategy in the future. This is a plan that has been in place for a while. And I think it's wrong as well to say that this is going to end with Robert Mugabe's departure. This is a structural problem. This is an issue concerning a regime. And it's a problem that goes beyond Robert Mugabe.
When I asked you about street protests, you couched your answer very carefully. Does that mean you have some doubts about the decision, for example, of the Zimbabwe trade unions to go for a series of mass action protests over the next few weeks and months, we believe?
No, I have no doubt at all. We commend what the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions has done. We commend their bravery and the bravery displayed by other civic organizations such as WAZA and the National Constitutional Assembly. What we do say, however, is that it must be well organized, and that shouldn't be the only focus.
But has it been well organized so far?
I think it has been very well organized.
Do you? Because it seems like the trade unions were taken aback when the first rash of demonstrations took place. There were beatings, there were mass arrests, and we saw Wellington Chibebe saying that perhaps they would have to rethink, perhaps there would have to be some sort of temporary suspension of protests. So he was surprised by Mugabe's reaction.
I think that they were taken aback by the preemptive nature of the arrests before they'd even commenced the demonstration.
But isn't that odd that the opposition as a whole is still taken aback by the fierce response of the Mugabe regime, which has been in power for 26 years and over the last 6 or 7 years has shown itself time and again to be prepared to use force to quell all street protests?
I would agree with that. I think that many of the people, for example, in the north of the country have been taken aback by what has happened in Zimbabwe in the last 6 years. Those of us who come from the southwest of the country, of course, know the true nature of this regime because we saw what it did in Matabeleland in the 1980s. And so we haven't been surprised by the reaction of this regime. I think the farming community especially was absolutely staggered. They enjoyed 20 years of bliss, and many people up in Harare and in the north and the east of the country have been completely taken aback.
Yeah, but that's learning. Understandable 6 years ago maybe, but it's less understandable today.
Well, one was always amazed by the braveness of this regime. I've been surprised myself. I've been in working in human rights work for 23 years in Zimbabwe, and I was staggered by the brazenness of what they did to the trade union leaders by beating them in the manner that they did, not even trying to give the excuse that they were beaten up in the street. They were taken into cells and beaten up systematically.
But you see, a lot of people outside Zimbabwe will wonder at your surprise when in 2005, we had 700,000 people rendered homeless because of the mass clearance of shanty towns around some of Zimbabwe's biggest cities. We've had the persistent reports from human rights groups of not just torture and beatings, but also of murder carried out by the Mugabe regime. And you tell me you're surprised that union leaders are still being beaten.
Well, I'm not surprised that they're still being beaten. I'm surprised that the regime has allowed the facade of civility to drop. One of the things that has distinguished the Mugabe, the ZANU-PF regime from, for example, a regime like Arap Moyo's regime, is that they have shown some finesse in the past. They've always described themselves as democrats. They've always been conscious of their international image. And so we're not surprised by the brutality, but we're surprised by the brazenness of it.
Your opposition movement is split. Why?
What the world needs to understand is that any organization, any group of people who are put under as much stress as the opposition have been in Zimbabwe in the last 6 years are ultimately going to crack. That's what happens to marriages. Many divorces.
Well, the movement for democratic change has cracked, has it?
I think it has cracked, but this is a direct result of 6 years of brutality. Morgan Tsvangirai has been subjected to a treason trial before a judge who had received a farm. He faced the death penalty. That has an impact on the person, and the same applies to the rest of us.
I mean, no one would doubt that Morgan Tsvangirai has suffered over the last 6 years, and now it seems you've abandoned him.
I don't think that we've abandoned him. There are, as we speak, talks taking place to try and reunite or at least get a coalition agreed to. But those of us who are no longer with him have said that we need to go back to the founding principles. And we don't believe that Morgan Tsvangirai is the problem. We believe that there are people who've infiltrated, who need to be dealt with by him. And when that happens, I have no doubt that a united front will be presented again.
What kind of people have infiltrated?
6 years ago when the MDC was set up, I have no doubt that the Director General of the CIO was given a specific mandate to infiltrate
Zimbabwe's Central Intelligence Organization.
The equivalent, Zimbabwe's equivalent of Stasi, was given a mandate to infiltrate and disrupt and, if possible, destroy the opposition. And I have no doubt that people have been infiltrated during that period of 6 years, and those are the people primarily responsible for organizing and perpetrating the violence directed against members of the MDC.
So you're talking about people close to Morgan Tsvangirai, who in your opinion are infiltrators working for Mugabe's intelligence?
I wouldn't say that they're close to Morgan Tsvangirai, but they certainly have got themselves in key positions. I don't think for a moment that Morgan Tsvangirai as an individual condones what has happened.
But the fact is that the split occurred when you and a number of your colleagues, senior colleagues, in the MDC decided it was right and proper to fight the Senate elections that Mugabe called for in November of 2005. And Mr. Tsvangirai, the leader of the party, thought that was plain wrong.
I think that the Senate election is simply a smokescreen. It wasn't the real reason. There had been issues building over time, and it just so happened that it was the Senate election that was the catalyst for that split which occurred in October last year.
But
there were philosophical differences.
Philosophical in what sense?
In essence, I think it was a difference in views as to how best to tackle the regime, with some saying that we needed to use all means at our disposal, including participation in obviously flawed Senate elections, whereas another faction of the party believed that the electoral process was so flawed in Zimbabwe that it should be abandoned.
Is it also the case that you believe some in the party wanted direct action, perhaps even contemplated violent action, and you were not prepared to go down that path?
Well, I personally have never been prepared to go down that route, not just for moral reasons, but for practical reasons. I believe that it would be foolhardy to tackle the ZANU-PF regime on the ground it has the most experience in.
You see, Morgan Tsvangirai says that your faction, the faction that chose to fight these, as you called them, deeply flawed Senate elections, was playing directly into the hands of Robert Mugabe. You offered some sort of legitimacy to those elections. You also, by creating this split within the Movement for Democratic Change, did the work of the Mugabe regime for us.
Well, I don't think that we legitimized the elections at all. All rational people throughout the world know that Zimbabwe's elections are deeply flawed.
So if they're pointless, why fight them?
It comes back to this philosophical question of, are you going to use all means at your disposal, or are you going to cut off means? The problem about not participating in elections is, where does that end? Does that mean that one doesn't go into parliament? Does it mean you don't use the court system? And what signal does that send to the ZANU-PF regime? Is the signal one that you have abandoned your policies, your principles of non-violent methods of tackling this regime, or are you going to participate using the same methods we have for the last 6 years?
You just gave me a hint that behind the scenes there are some sorts of talks going on to try to heal the deep rift within the Movement for Democratic Change.
One of the ways one can facilitate unity, once again, is by employing what is termed tough love. You have to build up a faction so that it cannot be disregarded. Once it is there as a political force, that will encourage those, the hawks in the other side, who believe that the Mutambara faction was not going to be a factor in Zimbabwe politics. You force their hand to reunite. And when those two groups reunite, either as a united opposition or in some form of coalition or alliance, then we will present a very powerful force against the ZANU-PF regime.
Do you think the problem perhaps lies in the nature of the Movement for Democratic Change? It did in its early days receive substantial amounts of money, for example, from white farmers. We all know that Robert Mugabe made a great deal of political play of the pictures of white farmers writing out checks to the MDC. And haven't you always been vulnerable to Mugabe's charge that in the end you are the tool of the colonialist, imperialist powers in Zimbabwe and beyond?
Well, let me challenge that assumption in the first place. You say that we received substantial funding from white farmers. That is part of Robert Mugabe's propaganda. He was fortunate enough to get one television clip, but we certainly didn't get substantial funding. The MDC...
You're denying that white farmers were early supporters in 1999?
Of course, white farmers were supporters, as were people from the churches and human rights groups and the trade union movements and all forces that wanted to restore the rule of law in Zimbabwe. But to say that we were somehow aligned with white farmers isn't correct at all.
Well, then let's be blunt about it. Isn't it, in a sense, an expression of the problem you have, that you sit before me as a senior leader and spokesman of the Movement for Democratic Change as a white Zimbabwean? That is a problem for your movement, given the way Mugabe consistently plays the liberationist and the nationalist card.
Well, it may appear to be a problem externally, but certainly internally it isn't a problem. I was elected last year in a predominantly black constituency, a working class constituency, which is 95% black. I stood against a black woman cabinet minister and beat her with a 76% majority. There's no problem within Zimbabwe. It's one of the remarkable things about Zimbabwe. I think that we've gone a step further, several steps further than, for example, South Africa. Race is a propaganda ploy employed by Robert Mugabe, which gets a lot of currency in the international community, but actually doesn't rub within Zimbabwe.
But Mugabe is a canny political operator. I'm sure you can see that after 26 years. He doesn't make these statements and continue his tirades against people like you being the tool of Tony Blair and the colonial powers for no reason. He does it because it gives him political leverage.
I think it used to give him political leverage, but I think that the truth is now coming out in Zimbabwe, and I think even in the region, if we look, for example, at the last SADC heads of government meeting in Lesotho, you'll see that Robert Mugabe's propaganda, the use of race, the use of land, is wearing thin.
But can you be a coherent movement and such a broad church, bringing in everybody from the white farmers on the one hand to the poorest black Zimbabweans who have suffered under the slum clearances on the other? Can there be a meaningful political party that embraces all of those people and everything in between?
Well, we were originally a very broad church. White farmers are no longer a factor. There are perhaps 300 white farmers on the land. Whites have gone out in their droves from Zimbabwe. There are hardly any whites left in the country. So it's not as broad a church as it was. And I think that in the context of 6 years of struggle, we are refining our policies. We've got a clearer ideological and philosophical direction.
How bad do you think can things get in Zimbabwe? The UN Special Envoy for Humanitarian Affairs has called it a meltdown. Inflation's running at over 1,000%, 80% unemployment, many, many millions of people living on international food aid. Can it get worse?
It can get far worse. One of the tragedies that we're not doing this interview in Zimbabwe is that you don't see for yourself what is going on. Life for the average Zimbabwean is sheer hell now, with rampant inflation, food shortages, an increasingly authoritarian and paranoid regime. It's a hellhole at present. But unfortunately, when we look elsewhere in Africa, if you take the extreme examples of Somalia and Liberia, it can go a long way down. One just hopes that because Zimbabwe is situated in the middle of southern Africa, that regional leaders will understand that this is a cancer in our region, and they need to take stronger measures to rein in this regime so that we can negotiate a way out of this mess.
Do you think Mugabe is going to have to go before his term ends in 2008?
I think that if we're to stop the suffering of Zimbabweans, if we're to tackle the economy, he needs to go today, he needs to go yesterday. But I think he's so fearful that he'll hang on to the death.
We spoke to Jonathan Moyo, who, as you well know, used to be his information minister, now an independent MP. He says that the end game is upon us, and that when it comes, there will be huge splits within ZANU-PF, the ruling party. He says there could even be civil war. Do you believe that?
I believe that there's a danger of that. I think that what will restrain people is the memories of two civil wars in the recent past, the liberation struggle in the 1970s and the Gurkurahundi in the 1980s. Those two civil wars acted as an enormous restraint on the people. Zimbabweans are remarkably peace-loving as a result. But let me say this, that the only difference really between the MDC and ZANU-PF at present is that the MDC split is out in the open, whereas ZANU-PF has managed to paper over its splits, but they're very serious. I think that the change will come when the military and the police finally realize that this pool of patronage used by Robert Mugabe has dried up. When that happens, there's a danger that they will fall under one or other of these ZANU-PF divisions or factions, and that could spell trouble.
There have been negotiations in the last couple of years between members of the opposition, the MDC, and ZANU-PF. Do you believe that there can be negotiations now or in the very near future?
I think that there have to be negotiations. One of the political realities of Zimbabwe is that despite what the ZANU-PF regime has brought to bear on Zimbabweans, they still retain enormous support in certain areas of the country. For example, in the Mashonaland rural areas up in the north of the country, ZANU-PF still has core support. And to that extent, it remains a massive factor in Zimbabwe politics. There can be no settlement of the Zimbabwean crisis without ZANU-PF's involvement in that. Now, our hope, of course, is that we can deal with moderates within ZANU-PF, and there are some, and bring them to the negotiation table so that we can thrash out agreement regarding a new constitution, which in turn will lead to the first genuinely free and fair elections in Zimbabwe since independence.
But are you prepared to say to Mugabe, if he is to retire from the scene, and to his key lieutenants, are you prepared to say to them that you will offer them guarantees of safety, of the clearance of any suggestion of legal action against them from the table as part of a deal?
I have much deeper human rights roots than political roots. I was a human rights lawyer before going into politics. So the thought of granting amnesty to people guilty of war crimes is anathema, but that's a personal view.
We have to take that action.
We have to take a practical decision. We have to weigh up whether it is worthwhile pursuing a prosecution against Mugabe, against the deaths that are taking place in Zimbabwe every week. 3,500 people are dying in Zimbabwe every week through this deadly combination of AIDS, poverty, and malnutrition. We have to bring an end to that. And the price that we have to pay may be to grant Robert Mugabe amnesty if it is going to bring an end to this calamitous situation that we face and provides him with a safe and secure way out.
And if that doesn't work, and if Jonathan Moyo is right, and there is the prospect of violence, civil strife inside Zimbabwe, will the MDC in the end make preparations for that, and in the end fight if it has to?
If I have my way, we will remain committed to the principles of Gandhi and Martin Luther King. I don't believe that any form of violence is going to help Zimbabweans. I think, if anything, it will help a ruthless and paranoid regime. This is the argument that we've made for 6 years. The one thing that the ZANU-PF regime wants is for us to take up arms of war, because they've fought a guerrilla war. They have the...
Are you absolutely sure that nobody in the MDC is currently contemplating or preparing for armed action?
I can say with absolute assurance that in our faction...
Well, it's not actually what I asked you. What about the Movement for Democratic Change generally?
Well, I don't know what some of the people who've been infiltrated into the organization are planning, but I certainly know that my colleagues of like mind in the other faction, people like Tendai Biti and Morgan Tsvangirai himself, are not contemplating that. And certainly if any of them are contemplating, then that would certainly secure us never joining up with them again.
You've spent, as you've said, more than 20 years fighting for human rights in Zimbabwe. You've spent the last 7 years involved with the Movement for Democratic Change. Are you more pessimistic now than you've ever been about Zimbabwe's short and medium-term future?
No, I'm not pessimistic, surprisingly enough, because I study history, and I realize that dictators come and go, and they're often the authors of their own demise. So when one looks at Hitler in his final days, he became more extreme, more paranoid, and I see the same happening to this regime. If anything, I think the regime is speeding up its own demise. And so, in the context of this being a process, I see us nearing the end.
David Coulthard, thank you very much for being on Hard Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.